From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Ross Reynolds. As we've been reporting, the prospect of coal trains carrying fuel from Montana and Wyoming mines to as many as 5 Northwest coal ports has prompted strong support from communities that see jobs. The issue has also galvanized environmental opponents of coal trains. Where do you stand on this and why? I'm at 206-543-5869. That's 206-543-KUOW. Maybe you don't know where you stand on this and you've got some questions. Well, EarthFix's Ashley Ahern has been covering this story like a tablecloth and knows about it, as much about it as anybody does. She's here to answer your questions, too. It's a toll-free call, 800-289-5869. You can write to us, conversation@kuow.org. We're going to get to an advocate and an opponent of this in just a couple of moments and to your phone calls at 206-543-5869. But I wanted to refer back to that story that we just heard about coal dust, and you were talking about the environmental impact in today's story. And Lauren wrote to us on Facebook, "Let the trains go through. I can't understand why the coal and or train companies can't just invest in covers for the coal cars." Ashley, have you asked that question? Why does the dust even have to escape?
Yeah, that's a great question. I have asked that question, and I've been told a couple reasons. First is cost. It would cost a lot of money to cover the coal train cars. It would add weight as well, potentially. And the bigger problem is ventilation. If you cover a coal train car, you run the risk of spontaneous combustion in the coal train car, and that coal could smolder all the way from the mines in Wyoming to the coast, potentially. That's not good for business, and it's not really safe either. So those are the big reasons. I don't know about putting tarps or some sort of plastic over the top, but I think you still run into the ventilation problem. So that's what I've been told, but I would welcome some more expertise on that.
Your colleague at EarthFix, Amelia Templeton, had a story today about two investors in the coal export terminal proposed for Oregon's South Coast dropping out. Are you seeing other investor uncertainty in these facilities?
It's a tricky thing to report, and Amelia really did a great job on that story. That was an EarthFix exclusive that came out on Friday. Investors don't want to talk about uncertainty when they're trying to land a deal because they're trying to bring money to these projects. So it's usually it comes out later on after we find out that they're backing away from the deal. And just to be clear, the Coos Bay terminal is still on the table as something that could happen. But we have a recent report by Sightline highlighted some problems with the Amber Energy Company and their investment in ports in the Northwest, just questioning whether or not they're stable as a company. And I think they raised some good questions about that. I think that this is a hard thing to cover on the investor side of things. There are a lot of closed doors and not a lot of open conversations happening about who's behind what.
Well, they're not talking because obviously they don't want to spur concern.
Exactly.
If they are concerned.
Exactly.
But do you think this is a significant? It might be too early to tell and hard to parse out what it means, but the opposition has been working hard on this. Is there any significance to these investors dropping out, or do we have to wait to see whether more of this happens?
I think I would hesitate to attribute any of these moves as a result of environmental opposition. I think it's a larger game of chess in terms of which ones of these terminals is going to be the most, have the greatest potential to actually be built. Yes, that's true, but it's also a question of demand. What do these companies see their needs being, and how much coal do they need to move? Do you want to go with a smaller terminal, or do you want to try to put your horses, your money behind a big terminal like Gateway Pacific that could take almost double what some of these other terminals that are proposed could handle? So it's a larger game of chess, I think.
What do you think about this story that we've been covering? 206-543-5869. That's 206-543-KUOW. Or maybe you've just got a question. Ashley will do her best to answer that for you. 800-289-5869. Or if you'd prefer to, you can just write to us. It's conversation@kuow.org. Let's bring into the conversation Lori Hennessy. Lori Hennessy is a spokesperson for the Alliance for Northwest Jobs and Exports, a supporter of this move to the coal terminals. Lori, kind of top line, why do you support this idea?
I support it because I still believe that you can make an environmental argument for exporting coal to the Northwest. And in the end of the day, we feel the countries the coal's going to are going to be using coal, and it's a matter of which coal they use, whether they use someone else's coal or our coal. And we also feel at the same time you create a lot of jobs and help communities.
How many jobs?
That's something that I know Ashley and others have been talking about a lot. It seems to be an issue of confusion for a lot of the folks out there, but we believe that we have some pretty solid numbers that if you combine the construction jobs and the long-term jobs, it's upwards of 11,000 jobs across the region. And again, that does include construction jobs.
Now, are you also including kind of the bump on? Oftentimes these projections include, well, they'll have to hire more people at the restaurants to serve these folks. Does that include those kind of jobs?
No, this is just jobs at the facilities, again, including the short-term construction jobs, but it does not include those jobs that come from that in the surrounding communities.
There's been a lot of discussion on this. Ashley, you want to jump in there?
Well, yeah. Hi, Lori. First of all, when you look at the jobs breakdown, there is a pretty steep drop from those initial construction jobs to build those terminals down to the long-term, you know, actual created jobs at the terminals themselves. So I'm not sure what you're talking about when you say the confusion issue, but maybe you could elaborate a little bit now about how many jobs are going to be created up front and then how many jobs are actually going to be long-term full-time employment at the terminal, say at Gateway Pacific, for example, up near Bellingham.
You know, I don't, and I wish I had it right here. I don't have the chart right here, Ashley. You probably have it memorized.
It's about 430.
Thank you. You know, in terms of the Gateway project and other projects, you're right. There's a tremendous number of jobs that are construction jobs. And the confusion that I'm referring to is that I just want to be very clear to people which part are the construction jobs, because we don't want anyone to think that we're growing that number beyond where it is. But the construction jobs, what we're hearing, are vital jobs. And so, yes, there's a drop in that number when you look at the long-term jobs. But we think the construction jobs are very, very important.
Lori Hennessy with the Alliance for Northwest Jobs and Exports. Thanks very much. So her argument, they'll be using that coal anyway in Asia. It's got to go somewhere. And also she makes the jobs issue, which we hear quite frequently. Let's go to the other side of the debate. Kimberly Larson is a representative with Power Past Coal Coalition and Climate Solutions. Kimberly, why do you not support these terminals?
Hi. Thanks so much for doing this program. It's great allow listeners the opportunity to learn more about this, because we find the more they learn, the more they don't like it. And that's the case across the region. I think one thing I just want to first make sure is clear, that this isn't environmentalists opposing this. This is community opposition across the region that we're seeing. We have 500 businesses that have either raised concerns or come out opposed, including things like, you know, CenturyLink Stadium, an event center. We have 4 dozen municipalities that are saying, like, this is not a good idea for our communities and our economies. 600 health professionals, close to 200 elected officials. So it is a really broad and diverse set of voices.
Okay, that's who lines up with you opposing this. But I want to get to the why of what's the most important thing that people should keep in mind if they're deciding whether this is a good idea or not.
Yep, I think it, you know, I think about it like when I'm at the grocery store and you see onion on the shelf that might look appealing. And it turns out, actually, you get home and you start peeling away those layers, and it turns out it's there are, first of all, lots of layers, and you're realizing there's lots more impacts and there's lots more to this than you realized. And it's also kind of getting stinkier and stinkier as you get deeper and deeper.
Okay, it's an onion. It's an onion. But maybe rather than the analogy, you could talk about a layer or two.
Yeah, a good example. Obviously, as an organization like Climate Solutions, we're concerned about the climate impacts, not only from the facilities themselves and the, you know, with the diesel exhaust and what that means for carbon emissions, but also ultimately what this means to encourage the infrastructure to these coal plants to be built abroad and burn this much coal that we're otherwise not going to be burning here in the U.S. with coal use declining here domestically. That's one thing. We look at economic loss, though. You know, we've got to start looking at the jobs we would lose. 15,000 people employed in the Sound as far as the fishing industry, and one accident could spell disaster for tribes like the Lummi tribe, but also folks like, you know, Pete Knutson at Loki Fish, who's also on the Puget Sound Fish Commission, and that's significant. We look at, you know, real estate impacts. We have research now that shows there would be impacts to real estate values along the rail lines from coal train traffic specifically. And then we look at, you know, a lot of other health impacts. That's why, you know, Department of Health, 600 health professionals are saying at least, hey, wait, we got to look at this more. We got to do a health impact study. We got to really make sure we know what we're getting into before we say yes, because this could really spell a lot of impacts. It's even why it's interesting the Ferndale School District hasn't said they're opposed or again or for, but they wrote a letter during the scoping process for Cherry Point saying, you know, we have over 400 kids in our school with asthma. We're concerned about emissions, not just dust, but diesel exhaust and a whole other set of pollutants.
Kimberly, I want to interrupt you just for a minute here. What do you make of the survey that came out, or recent surveys, several of them that have been done, that actually show that the majority of people in the Northwest actually support coal export terminals? So, I mean, you're listing off this list of coalition and businesses that are worried, but in reality, the numbers are looking pretty different.
No, well, I think, actually, if you look at the numbers over time, you will see that there's actually a decline in the support. And that goes to show, and once again, we've also seen the more people learn about this, and some of those polls, the first blush numbers show, oh, it looks like people might support this. But then there's additional follow-up questions, and that support starts to kind of chip away and fall away because people start finding out more information, kind of going back to the onion, and now you start getting into it more, and you realize that, wow, to say yes to this, we're just going to have to close our eyes and hold our noses.
Kimberly Larson, I want to move on because we've got some questions on the line, too. I really appreciate you taking the time to speak with us.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Kimberly Larson with the Power Past Coal Coalition and Climate Solutions. If you just tuned in, Ashley Ahern, who's been covering the coal train story, is with me. Maybe you've got some questions about what you've heard or some questions about other things that you've heard. We're at 206-543-5869. Maybe you've got an opinion about this that you'd like to share with us. Ashley, I want to talk just to kind of about the basics here. Beyond the coal dust issue and a lot of the other things, how might these coal trains affect our traffic in Seattle?
That's a great question. I think that's something a lot of Seattleites are concerned about. We've heard the mayor of the city conducted a study and said and found that Seattleites could spend up to 50% more time waiting at railroad crossings. And by 2015, rail crossings could be down an additional 83 minutes per day. That's at max build out for the proposed terminal north of Seattle. So when you look at the kind of map of the region, Seattle stands to be impacted and our Puget Sound area stands to be impacted if the Gateway Pacific Terminal is built. So that would mean up to 18 trains, 9 trains coming and going up and down Puget Sound to get to that terminal. So that would affect communities all along the railroad. So Everett, Edmonds, all these other.
Well, there's 5 proposed terminals. Are any other of them north of here? So traffic would be going through Seattle.
No.
Now, also Bellingham would be affected if it goes north. And Bill, a longtime resident, wrote to me, here's one negative that means a lot to me. To seriously restrict our wonderful Bellingham waterfront would be unthinkable. He talks about the easy access to parks there and marinas and restaurants. Would the access to the waterfront be severely restricted in Bellingham because of these trains if they go that way?
I have not looked directly and closely at Bellingham, but I've spent some time up there, and I think anybody who's enjoyed the boundary. Lovely boardwalk park right along the water. You can see the coal trains kind of come right between this nice walk along the water and the rest of the city. So I don't know the actually hard stats on how that would actually impact, but there's no doubt that the route of the trains would cut along the water.
And unless I'm mistaken, the trains go right through the city. At least in Seattle, the trains go underneath downtown through that tunnel. Unless I'm mistaken, there's no tunnel like that in Bellingham, so it would cut across the entire city. We're at 206-543-5869, 800-289-5869. Let's go to Sarah. She's listening to us in the Central District. Sarah, thanks for taking the time to call. Do you know what you think about this, or do you just have a question?
You know, I'm for it if two things. I don't see why they couldn't get a cover that would have small enough holes that the particulate can get through, but you'd have enough airflow. And then two, as far as weight, that's kind of negligible in my opinion, because, I mean, they're hauling hundreds of thousands, millions of tons of this coal, you know, and that's the cost of business too.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if you were listening a little bit earlier. We were talking about this, and Ashley Ahern said there's an issue of heat building up on these trains. And is the issue of covering them in any way? You mentioned the possibility of other sorts of coverings that maybe would allow some air circulation. Is that still being actively looked at by those who are backing this?
You know, I wonder if Lori is still on the line right now. Lori Hennessy.
No, I'm sorry,
no.
She's not.
Okay. I have not been able to get an answer, a straight answer for that, and what exactly the status is of the thinking at BNSF or other coal shippers would illuminate that. So I will look into that, though. That's a great question and needs to be updated. But as I said earlier in the program, first, it's an issue of cost. It's going to cost money. And yeah, when you look at the price margin, if you're paying $10 a ton for coal in the Powder River Basin, you're selling it for, depending on the market, around $100 in China. That's a good markup, but you start to see that profit being eaten away when you have to factor in added costs of covering coal cars. So that's a business concern, I'm sure, that shippers and coal companies are thinking about.
Now, there's also the question of once the coal would get to this terminal, it's going to get loaded onto ships. Could that affect us in Puget Sound if one of these was built that was sending ships into Puget Sound?
Yes. At maximum capacity, the Gateway Pacific Terminal could have upwards of 450 coal tankers coming and going in and out of the Strait of Juan de Fuca every year. So that would be a very significant increase in tanker traffic in the waters of Puget Sound. And it would have arguably, well, already direct impacts. I mean, as some listeners may have heard, we did an interview with a Lummi tribal member, Jay Julius, and he is a crabber, and his crab pots were taken out by one of these tankers, not a coal tanker, but one of these large tankers that's already working the waters of the Strait of Juan de Fuca when they had to be kind of circling to wait for berth and in rough weather, and all of his crab pots got ripped up. So this is, you know, just one anecdotal example of how, you know, the tanker traffic does have a very real impact on people's livelihoods in Puget Sound, and a 450 plus increase at max capacity, I should be clear, would be not insignificant.
You know, we've been talking a lot about if the coal terminal goes in Bellingham, the impact of that, but there are four other proposals out there, right?
Right, but this is the one that would directly impact Puget Sound. The others are Coos Bay, which has direct access to the ocean, and the mouth of the Columbia River, the other two. So, yes, barge impacts on the Columbia River, as well as, you know, tanker impacts in Puget Sound, yeah.
Let's go to Jim. He's listening to us this afternoon. We're talking about the coal trains. We've been covering this issue for quite some time. It's really a fiery issue among supporters who see jobs coming in and opponents who are concerned about a problem with the coal dust, as we reported on today, and also other environmental impacts. Jim, thanks for calling. What do you think about this?
I'm absolutely against it, at least the one north of Seattle, which is going to put train traffic through Seattle.
Why?
Well, I don't think anybody... I'm interested in what SDOT really has to say about it.
That's the Seattle Department of Transportation?
Right.
Yeah.
It's interesting that there have been studies done about the traffic impact, but when somebody tells me about 83 minutes worth, that crossings will be closed for 83 minutes, I have a business, a total during the course of a day, I have a business on right off of Elliott and Broad. And it's not just about my business, but it's about every person that drives from Ballard and other points north through this choke point. Broad and Elliott is an incredible choke point. So the minute you close a crossing for a train, it isn't closed for 1 minute. Traffic doesn't back up for 1 minute of closing. The impact of closing the crossing for 10 minutes.
Because these trains are long. These are long trains. So you got to sit there until the whole train goes by.
But not only that, you close it for 10 minutes, you've got 40 minutes worth of backup, because the backup that's accrued, especially during the rush hour traffic going north and southbound,
right,
is absolutely astounding. Without any trains present during rush hour, you can still promise yourself a 10 to 15 minute wait.
Absolutely.
Trying to get anywhere close to Aurora.
Jim, thanks for bringing that out. And lots of us who have to drive across those train tracks have experienced those waits with the current train traffic. And Jim asked about the Seattle Department of Transportation. Those numbers you were giving us earlier, are they from SDOT?
No, that's a study that was commissioned by the city of Seattle, so not SDOT. But there are other, you know, Northwest Ports conducted a study and said, you know, right now we've got 81 trains going from Auburn to Seattle, and we could see an increase of up to 102 trains by 2020. That's under a high growth scenario. So, I mean, the numbers are in flux. I think that more information is needed for sure.
Let's take a call from Mike. Mike's joining us today from Bellingham. And Mike says here, you're against the idea of the coal trains. Give me the top reason why.
I guess the top reason why is I live in Bellingham, and the increased coal train traffic just wouldn't be beneficial for the area. I understand the job aspects of it, but my fear is that those jobs aren't going to be local jobs. The construction jobs are going to come from outside the area, whatnot. With the Arctic Challenger, a lot of those jobs in the area were from Oregon that I've seen. Not only that, but I work in the harbor in Bellingham, and there's really limited access for the roads. And the increased coal train traffic would greatly decrease the ability to get to town.
Yeah. So thanks so much for that phone call, Mike. So a question about the jobs maybe not even being jobs for local people.
Yeah, although I will say that at least when I was doing some reporting down in Grays Harbor, that coal terminal, they were considering one for Grays Harbor, Hoquiam, Washington, and is off the table. But part of the, you know, the requirements for even getting that proposal on the table was you will contract with the longshoremen here and the construction workers here. So I don't know the latest off the top of my head for Gateway Pacific and what their agreements are, but I wouldn't be surprised if there are some agreements that they're willing to commit to say, yeah, we're going to hire local people.
You know,
I mean, how do you guarantee that? I don't know, but that those are, I would not be surprised if those commitments exist.
What are the needs here? I mean, is it possible that they will drop the Bellingham coal export port and build the four others?
I'm not a betting woman, or at least not when I'm sober. But there are, you know, it really is a horse race. I think five different terminals, it's kind of anyone's guess right now. I would think, though, that you're looking at the two biggest ones are the ones to watch, I think, right now. Longview in Washington and the Cherry Point North Gateway Pacific Terminal north of Bellingham, I think, are the by far the largest in the region that are proposed. And I don't know if both of them will be built. I think that the support is stronger for the Longview Terminal in terms of local support, a more blue-collar community that stands to gain much more in terms of construction, longshoremen support from folks that live right around there. I think that the other smaller ones, it's sort of anybody's guess. Yeah.
And finally, if opponents are successful and there are no coal export ports here in the Northwest United States, is Canada salivating at the opportunity to open coal export ports there?
That's a really good question. And there are some interesting kind of back and forth going on between the coal proponents and the coal export opponents. What I will say is I spent some time at the West Shore Terminal, as you heard in part one of the story yesterday, and talked to a guy, Dennis Horgan, who's the manager of that terminal. And he's been working in the coal industry for 25 years. And said, you know, we really don't have that much more room up here. Mm-hmm. And furthermore, there's a large company, Teck Mining, a Canadian company. Canada's in coal mining itself. They're opening five or six mines up there, or are, you know, in the process of permitting five or six new coal mines of their own. And granted, it's metallurgic coal, which is different than the coal that's coming from the Powder River Basin, but they want to export their coal. So whether or not they're going to be granting, you know, anywhere close to 48 million tons or 54 million tons for the Gateway Pacific Terminal at ports, you know, at their terminals in existence up there is, I think, very unlikely. I think the maximum would be close to 20 million tons that could go out through the various ports in Canada. Mm-hmm. And that would be if they can kind of elbow their way in. And yeah, it's going to be in bits and pieces.
Elliot tweeted at KUOW Convo, he's undecided and tired of being screamed at. Is there a intolerance at listening to the other side on this issue now?
I think that that's been the hardest thing. I did a story a couple months ago. Actually, I went up to Bellingham and had an amazing evening with people on both sides, two old friends that are on opposite sides of the issue. And it's a real testament, I think, to the strength of communities that people are still talking about this issue in civil ways. But I do see an increase in just heat, a lot of heat around this issue and a lot of anger on both sides. And I think that there are some people who have told me, I don't talk to my neighbors about this issue anymore. It's just too controversial. We feel differently. We just don't bring it up in polite conversation, which to me is unfortunate because we live in a democracy and everybody should be talking about this stuff.
Finally, when's the next penny drop on this? So when's the next decision point?
Yeah. So the review process right now, at least for the largest, the Gateway Pacific Terminal, they have just brought in comments from the public about what people think should be considered in the environmental review process. And they got 16,000 comments. So right now, the Army Corps is in the perhaps unenviable position of having to dig through those comments and figure out how to proceed with the scoping process. That could take months. The review process itself could take more than a year. So that's probably the first one to be watching.
Well, lots more time to discuss this.
Yes.
Ashley Ahern, we look forward to your next reporting on this. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ashley Ahern from EarthFix. From KUOW, I'm Ross Reynolds.